Hi, I'm Mark Hummel. I hope you're enjoying the Harmonica Party and the other content that we post on our channel. Now you can become part of the show for the price of a cheap cup of coffee. For $3 a month, you can help bring the blues and the stories to you. All right. Hi, everybody. My name is Mark Hummel. This is Mark Hummel's Harmonica Party, and I'm sitting here with the great Curtis Salgado from Portland, Oregon, my longtime friend. And we were just talking a minute ago about how Curtis got started on the harmonica and in the blues, and it was so good, I think we need to make an episode out of it. So I think we left off that you were a teenager in Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah, you know what, if to kind of reassess where, it's kind of like how I fell into the California scene, you.
That's
and,
what
and,
we wanted.
And the whole, yeah.
Okay.
Because I was just looking at, where'd your book go?
The book's back there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was it's a book about the Bay Area blues.
Right.
Which has all these great pictures in it with, what's his name? What was the guy? Maurice McInnes. This guy could sing so well and also...
And played racked harp and guitar.
Right. Yeah. Yes, he did.
Yeah.
I saw him play guitar, but when he sang... I saw him do Mustang Sally, which, of course, everybody thinks is overdone, but not when you saw him do it.
No.
Because he sounded like Wilson Pickett.
Yeah. No,
he could do the high, he could do that really high, crack his voice and whistle, and he was remarkable, man. Did a bad Jimmy Reed.
Yeah, he did a great Jimmy
Reed. Tough Jimmy Reed.
Really great Jimmy Reed.
And matter of fact, after seeing him at Eli's Mile High Club, he did Mustang Sally, and I went back to... Eugene and Portland. I went back to Portland and started doing Mustang Sally.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I never, you know.
Well, I want you to tell people about.
I couldn't sing it as good as him.
You and Gary Smith and how Gary kind of opened up the whole scene for you.
This because
that was interesting.
The California scene and the Bay Area scene is huge, and I would never had any idea to preface this. I had no idea that all of these wonderful, our heroes were down here. It was just, you know. I didn't know the history of Oakland or Richmond or San or the Bay Area. So here it is. I am playing in a band. We called ourselves the Nighthawks, not to be confused with the guys out of Washington, D.C. And we had a strong presence in Eugene, Oregon, and up and down the I-5 corridor in that area. And I'm playing, and it's at a place called Murphy's and Me. And just to give a little history... I don't know if it was the same way down here in California, but in Oregon, they ran through a legislation. I can't even say it.
It's a tongue twister.
Yeah, it is. They ran it through with two musicians who had the wherewithal and thinking forward about seeing if they could get music in bars, in restaurants. Just in places that serve food.
So you're saying prior to that, it was only in like ballrooms
exactly.
or big concert arenas, stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so they were just like, if you had a tavern, that's the word. If you had a tavern, you know, they were trying to, and see, this was going to, it was a win-win situation. You, if you brought in live music, it'd bring in customers and the customers and then the LCC, the Liquor Commission of Oregon and all these put it together, and they ran through the government and through put a bill forward that made it so you could have live music in taverns and in restaurants and bars. That changed everything.
Yeah.
And I was coming up just then. I was about 18, fresh out of high school, 18, 19, and they started to have live music. One of the places was called Murphy's and Me in Eugene, Oregon. And I'm playing them. Now, this is about 4 years later. I'm playing at Murphy's and Me. But just so you folks understand, it's like, that changed everything.
So
All of a sudden, you had a place.
How old were you?
I started playing in bars when I was 18. Yeah. At this place called the Roman Forum. You know, which was basically close to one of those chicken wire bars.
Really?
It was a tough joint.
In other words, there weren't a lot of Romans
All of these bikers and college kids.
Right.
you know, and that's basically saying gatches. What am I saying? That's basically like saying matches and gasoline.
Right.
Trouble is going to happen.
Trouble is going to brew.
Yeah, yeah. So back at this, I'm standing playing on stage singing, and there's this guy comes up and he looks us over like, who are these guys? And he's looking around at the end of a song. He's nice. He goes, hey, who are you guys? I introduce him. Well, who are you? And he says, my name is Gary Smith. And I knew who he was. And he couldn't believe it. It blew his mind. Basically, it's like, you're Gary Smith from San Jose? I've got your 40. I've got your EP.
Right.
He goes, you got my EP? He had an EP that was basically two pieces of cardboard taped together that had his record.
Right, right.
And he had a great tone and stuff. And a matter of fact, there's a picture of him on the front. And,
right, kind of a blurry picture.
And Steve Gomes.
Gomes on bass. Yep. John Garcia on guitar.
Yeah, yeah. So I had that, and he couldn't believe it. And so we made fast friends and stuff, and he set me straight. He was like, you know, you're using the wrong kind of microphone. I had a microphone that was the Green Bullet, which is a, you know, try to, it.
It's a much bigger, heavier mic.
It's,
than
yeah.
The, yeah.
I don't, is it bigger?
Yeah,
it
it's a little bit, it's a little bit wider, I think. It's about so.
Right.
So, so big, whereas the static.
I think it's
about
like this big.
See, the audience isn't going to know what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it's about this big.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what she said. No. So anyway, so he goes, you got the wrong kind of microphone. I do, you know, yeah, you're looking for a JT30, a static. What the hell is that and stuff? We made fast friends, like I said, and I don't know how the connection did grow. And I called him up. I would call him up when he was back in San Jose. But it wasn't very long after that, and I'm going to say a few months just to move the story along, that he said, why don't you come down here to San Jose, and I'm going to do, I'm doing a recording, and he's already involved in it, in San Francisco, which will turn out to be, what's
Blue
it called?
Bay.
Blue.
Right.
Yeah, Blue
right.
Bay. Which had... And I have, so let me, this is the punchline of this. It's like, I go, and that was, I go, okay, I'll come down here. And this would be the first time that I ever, I think, got on a jet plane. And
wow.
I flew down here and got together with Gary, and we immediately went to the studio, Gary Smith and Steve Gomes and myself.
Junior Watson.
Junior Watson wasn't there, but
oh,
you're going ahead.
Okay.
This is like, Junior was, I didn't meet Junior for years.
Okay.
This is Steve Gomes. Gary Smith picks me up at the airport, and we're going to San Francisco. I've never been there. And of course, you know, I am awestruck at the city. And
right.
I mean, I'm in San Francisco. How cool is that? You know?
Right.
And I'd never been there. And we walk into a studio, and High Tide Harris is in there. And he's sitting around. I've never heard of the guy. And Sonny Rhodes is sitting in there. And I'm hearing Gary Smith play harmonica. Again, I remember I had the EP. And they're playing the playbacks from this stuff. And there's Sonny Rhodes is doing the song. And they just brought it up on the board. Keep Holding On by Junior Parker.
Right.
And I hadn't heard the Junior Parker version yet, but I'll tell you something, Sonny Rhodes sounded just like Junior Parker.
Yep,
oh
sure
my
did.
God, he was just smooth singing the timbre,
yep,
everything. Yep. And keep a holding on, baby.
He was his valet.
You know, that's what he said. Yeah.
Yeah, he told me that when I first met him.
And I was stunned. And here's the real punchline. Over there, sitting there, they introduced me to Luther Tucker. And I'm like, Luther Tucker? I'll never forget this. Like, Luther Tucker? I'm sounding like Luther Tucker, Little Walter Luther Tucker. So I still, just to throw this in, as I listen to Little Walter, I bet you two or three times every week.
Right.
I just heard him day before yesterday.
Right.
I played him all day.
Right.
Sit there playing. And I catch something new and different or breathing or, you know, I was practicing on Off the Wall. Which I've never done in public, but...
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah, I've never played this song, but by God, I know it. So, that said, Luther Tucker is there, and this new guy that sings like Junior Parker, go back, Luther Tucker. I mean, I was what? What are you doing here? And as time went on, what happened was
he
now.
Said, I was looking forward to it. I can be out here.
Here's another ditty from my
ex. A little ditty from my ex-city.
Charlie Musselwhite is on the record.
Well, now, was he there?
No, he wasn't there. Okay. Possibly. Gary could tell me. I haven't seen Gary in a long time. But anyhow.
Well, you'll see him tonight.
I am looking forward to it.
Yeah.
But he's the one who launched it. So here's the punchline for that. So I would come back to San Francisco. I discovered all of these blues guys are there. And I would keep on discovering that over and for, I mean, year after year. It's like, so-and-so lives here. So, you know, Jimmy McCracklin lives in Oakland.
Right.
Johnny Guitar Watson's in Oakland and in L.A. And then I realized how big L.A. was. Yeah. It seems like I had my radar out. Yeah. I would have had my musical radar, but I didn't, you know. It's just, it wasn't until I got to meet folks that I realized all of these blues greats were here in California. Because, you know, they're going to go where the weather suits their clothes. And as everybody does. So, man, you and I, Sonny Rhodes. So that leads me to finding all these people and Gary Smith. And Gary Smith and I, he hit me to a whole bunch of stuff. Reggae. He took me to a record store.
He took me to a record store and said,
you want to get this and this and this. This guy right here, man. He pulled it out. And it was Bob Marley.
Yeah.
And it was, but it was a Bob Marley, Lee Scratch Perry.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
And the record itself was like a hard, it wasn't your typical, you know, LP. It was like made of glass or something. Hmm. I still have it.
Wow.
And it's the best Bob Marley all that stuff before he redid his stuff with the guy, what's his name, Chris Blackwell.
Or whatever. Oh, yeah. Island.
Yeah, Island Records. Right. So Gary turned me on to that. He got me straightened out with the Static Harmonica and I think
Static Mic, yeah.
Yeah, Static Mic. Rod Piazza was the king of the hill at the time.
Right,
like Rod Piazza could cut heads and da da da, and he was, and I already had the Bacon Fat record,
right?
So, but you know, I never met the guy, and you know, Gary had, he's seen him, and God, he had a reel to reel tape of George Harmonica Smith live in a club, and live in an LA club, and it was hair raising.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the
bands, I remember I got like a cassette tape. The Gomes had apparently, Steve Gomes had gone over to George's house and just tape recorded all of his 45s.
Before anybody had
them. Before anybody had them, yeah. I had that stuff really early on.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And what a nice guy, Steve Gomes.
Gomes is a great guy. Yeah.
Great bass player. Great.
But it's funny, you know, I mean, it was such a small world back then.
Yeah.
You know, it was
my world opened up.
I mean, but I'm just saying, I mean, it was like this group of people that, you know, like we all kind of got to know each other because we had this common interest. And it was like such an exciting thing to get to meet all these people you're talking about.
Yeah.
And get turned on to different records and that whole thing, you know.
Look, man, for me, some white kid from Eugene, Oregon, which isn't exactly ground zero for soul and blues, you know. And I'm coming down in Oakland, Richmond, and seeing not only you know, people from the Caucasian community, the black community, or, you know, the people that you admire and basically are just knocked out by it. It taught me, it you know, the whole reason music and jazz, it taught me about all segregation, racism, this. It got me into the Civil War. You don't know any of that stuff.
Right.
You got to remember, I'm young. I'm like 18, 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And I started listening to Count Basie when I saw him when I was 13.
That's
amazing.
I had
no idea. Yeah. Here's a little thing. I may have told this before, but I saw Count Basie and I told my father that's what I want to do. You know who was singing with him was a guy named Leon Thomas.
Oh, really? So yeah, wasn't Joe Williams?
No, no. Joe was with him in the early 60s, and by then I would have been.
Right.
I was 13 years old when I saw him, but at this point.
And didn't you say your father was like into jazz already?
Already. Man, yeah. He had it all. Yeah. He had Bix Beiderbecke, Louis Armstrong, Henry Red Allen.
Right.
You know, Fletcher Henderson, yeah. Billie Holiday, yeah. Dinah Washington.
Right.
He had all the stuff. Ray Charles, of course, because my dad's brother was from Seattle, and Ray Charles was in Seattle, and he was a huge Ray Charles. You know, so but back to Count Basie real quick, then we'll get back onto California, which is more important. I look at it and watching Leon Thomas sing, just the whole band, you know, Eddie Lockjaw Davis, Speedy Rufus Jones was on the drums, still had Walter Page on bass, Freddie Green on guitar. I knew them as a kid like baseball stats.
Wow.
You know, there's so-and-so, there's Buck Clayton, there's the... Yeah. And I said, I want to do this. My dad goes, Curtis, he laughs like, he goes, this is music for men. You know, those are men down there. Those are real men down there, and they're playing music. You know, I had no idea
the
road and a bus. He knew what was happening, what would be to get an organization of a full-on band
what
and
that
to
would
play
take,
at them and what that would take. So
this
is music made by men. So anyhow, back to you. Let's get to us. So Gary Smith introduced me, opened it up for me, not only in what to play, harmonica, new stuff I'd never heard, new George Smith I'd never heard. You know, his experiences with it. So he had a party, and it was at, I think it was at Chris Kane's house.
Wow.
And we went over to this house, and there was the boards were just filled with food. It was all, you know, Mexican food. And it's just like, you know, plates of enchiladas and this and that and whatever. And that's where I met Chris Kane.
Wow.
And that was a second visit, second or
third.
That was
when he had the Walter Fields Blues Band.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. So, him and Andy Just had that band.
And Andy Just was at, that's where
they
I
were,
met.
They played met, together back then.
I met Andy Just and Chris Kane at this party.
Right.
And I got up and sang my B.B. King thing.
Yeah.
You know, which isn't.
I'm sure they were impressed.
I was impressed with it. I was just, there's a whole scene down there that wasn't happening in Eugene, Oregon. In Eugene, Oregon, our scene was cool. You know, we had, I mean, I was had the Night Hawks and stuff, and Robert Cray and Richard Cousins had arrived. There was a great jazz
now,
scene
did,
in Eugene.
Did Robert and Richard live in Eugene when you met them?
Yes.
Okay.
They had just moved from Tacoma, Washington.
Okay.
And Robert is basically what they call, and no disrespect, an army brat.
Army brat,
But he was born in Germany. He was born
really?
In Germany, And, you know, there's Fort Lewis in Tacoma.
Right.
And when Robert and Richard moved in, real quick side note here, I had this band I was in. I was in the Nighthawks, but before that I was in a band called Three Finger Jack. And in that band was a saxophone player. And that saxophone player's name was Randy Reese. And Randy Reese and I are walking down the street on a sunny day in Eugene. He goes, you know, there's these two musicians that are in town that are into the blues and they're black.
Hmm.
And I was really like, really? Like, how are they our age? He goes, yeah.
And didn't
they
seem possible.
Didn't seem possible. And it was Richard and Robert. Richard was my age, and Robert, I think, is about a half a year older than me. So Robert and I were 19 at the time.
Right.
And they had moved from Tacoma together. And those two have been together forever.
They sure have.
And
and Bobby Murray was kind of part of that circle.
Bobby Murray didn't come down to Eugene, though. I heard about him when we meet him later.
Yeah.
And they had a harmonica player named Rocky Manzanares, who sounded like Paul Butterfield.
Really?
Yeah. And moving on, so I met those guys. That's what's the scene in Eugene. But in California down here, bigger scene, bigger black community, you know. Sonny Rhodes goes, dude, Sonny Rhodes, Curtis, we got to go over to my friend's house, J.J. Malone.
Curtis, I got somebody I want you to meet. There's somebody named J.J. Malone, and he's a very good friend of mine and an outstanding musician. I think you need to go over to his house right now. We're going to tape some music.
That's pretty much it. Yeah. So we went over to J.J.'s house, and this guy blew my mind because I remember standing there just being awestruck at the coolest voice, the sweetest, most passive man. Sit down at the piano, and he had a voice, and he reminded me of someone I don't know, but I really admire, and it's kind of like one of those underground heroes, is Little Johnny Jones.
Oh, yeah.
That's
why
I grew a goatee.
Right.
It wasn't Dizzy Gillespie.
Yeah,
or
Johnny Jones.
It was Little Johnny Jones, and his cool little bebop Smokies, you know. Right. And I just thought that was good, but man, I'm a big Johnny Jones fan, his piano playing. So for some reason, you know.
Let's take a break here, and we will come back with where you left off.
Okay.
All right.
Hi, I'm Mark Hummel. I hope you're enjoying the Harmonica Party and the other content that we post on our channel. Now you can become part of the show for the price of a cheap cup of coffee. For $3 a month, you can help bring the blues and the stories to you.
Okay, so we're back with Curtis Salgado. And he was just talking about the first time that the two of us met at J.J. Malone's house through Sonny Rhodes, who called me up and said, "Mark, Sonny Rhodes, I need you to get over to J.J. Malone's house because I got somebody I want you to meet, a young harmonica player from Eugene, Oregon, Curtis Salgado. So come on over. Get your ass over here."
And he said, "He's as good as you. You might even be better." He did.
That's great.
When you do that, I was standing and looking right at him when he did
perfect.
That call.
That's so funny, man.
And you know, I think you should come over.
Yeah, so I did. I came over, and you hung out all afternoon, and that was
that's how we met.
Became friends.
And we were playing with J.J.
And he was playing guitar, I think, too. He's a fantastic guitar player.
He was. I don't remember that. I remember
He was an awesome
remember
guitar.
Remember that he had an upright piano up against the wall.
Right.
The living room was practically empty, just the piano on that, and you and I stood there.
You had a reel-to-reel
tape. We checked each other out.
Right,
it's like,
that's right.
It's like this.
We got along. It seemed to me we got along right away.
Yes, we got along.
Kind of like talking about Gary.
But you know, you're like, wow, because we're two knucklehead harmonica players.
Right.
And
we're
both really
young. I want to say we were probably, I was about 21 at that point.
Yeah.
Because that was like 1975 or 76.
Right.
So I would have been about 20, 21. Really? I was young, man. We're both young.
Which I felt you were more mature than I was. I was. So
that's
I remember this.
Perception.
This is what I mean by pushing. Is like, let's see what you got. You know,
that's true. Yeah.
I got a side story. I was at the San Francisco Blues Festival when William Clark comes up and goes, "Hey, I hear you play. I mean, you're Curtis Salgado. Yeah, you know, my name's William Clark." And he goes, "Let's go over here. I want to see how good you are."
Yeah, that's what everybody did that.
And, you know, and it was, I'm like, "You win. You go ahead." I don't know. He was about 6'9".
Yeah, I remember Portnoy. The first time I ever met Portnoy.
Kick my ass behind the car or something.
First time I ever met Portnoy, Jerry Portnoy was the same thing. And he goes, "Oh, you play harp, huh?" I said, "Yeah, I know Rick Esther." And he goes, "Come over here, man. I want to hear you play."
Yeah, so I can see if I have any.
Yeah, so I play, and he goes, "Well, I can't show you nothing."
Well, that's nice.
Which is pretty nice.
I can't show you nothing.
Yeah.
William just wanted to win.
Exactly.
You know.
Well, Little Charlie's the other one. When I met Little Charlie, he was a harmonica player, and he goes, He goes, "Oh, you want to play, huh? Let me hear you play." So I play some for him. He goes, "Let's go have a cutting contest."
That's what we need, though. That's what we need. I was going to tell the story.
Go ahead.
Of you. Yeah, so he does that. He calls, and that's how we met. And you opened up the whole other stuff between you and Gary Smith and then me meeting these guys. So I have, when I was at the studio, so let's go back to Gary Smith. I don't know you yet. Sonny Rhodes is going, "Man, you should have me come down to Eugene. You know, I'll come down there and play." And I can, would Luther come? You know, I'm interested in Sonny Rhodes very much so. And I'm interested in Luther.
Right.
But there's a lot of in-between gray areas I can't remember, except that. That would lead to me talking to the band that I was with in Eugene, and we called ourselves the Nighthawks, as I said, and I'd go, I want to bring these guys here, and I want to, you know, let's put on a blues festival. Just like Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney. Come on, let's put on a play.
Let's go put on a blues festival.
Yeah, let's go put on a blues festival.
So now, did Buddy Akisich have anything to do with that?
Yes, at the very beginning. And here's how Buddy got involved.
He will be there tonight, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I talked to him already. So I'm playing with the Nighthawks at Murphy's and Me. And this is, you know, the timeline is goofy here, so skip the timeline. But it's after I meet Sonny Rhodes, we put on a blues festival. And I met this guy just before we really started moving forward with this idea. First, I had to talk the Nighthawks into it, and they were into it. And in my head, I'm thinking, I want to hang out with, there's nobody in Eugene, Oregon like this, but if you're going to learn how to play this music, which I'm learning off of records and playing and doing this and just playing every night music, and we did everything from Frank Zappa to the Miracles, Smokey Robinson. We turn around and play, you know, Keep On Drinking by Johnny Young, and then we play King Kong by Frank Zappa.
Wow.
And then we turn around and play, you know.
That's a hell of a medley.
Yeah,
man.
I Just Want to Make Love to You, Muddy Waters,
right.
James Cotton stuff, Charlie Musselwhite song, but basically everything.
Yeah.
You know.
Sounds like it.
And so Buddy Akisich met me in a bar, and Murphy's and Me. I got to get my thinking together. So we're at Murphy's and Me, and the band is quitting, and Buddy came up to me and said, who are you? Whatever. Look, I'll just, what can I do for you? I mean, anything you need. Is there anything I can be a part of? Basically, to put it in my terms, he just came up and said, what do you want me to do? What can I do? I want to be part of this.
Right.
And I just looked at him and said, yeah, you could go down and to California and get these two blues guys. And it was Sonny Rhodes. And I was trying to get Sonny Rhodes and Luther Tucker and Floyd Dixon, who I was aware of.
Right.
And a little side note that I'm really proud of. I brought John Belushi, Hey Bartender, because Belushi wanted to sit in.
Oh, right.
And I go, what do you want to do? And Belushi goes, let's do Jailhouse Rock. I said,
No way.
That's too corny. That's cornbread. Right, I said, that's corny. I'm not going to do that. And he goes, Johnny Be Good. I said, everybody and their dog does Johnny Be Good. I'll bring you a song. And I brought him Hey Bartender. Which, in turn, and I got to tell you this story, years later in the 19...
And this was during Animal House being filmed in Eugene.
Yeah. Yeah. But I didn't, by this point, no, by the time I was talking to Belushi, I did not know who he was. I still haven't seen Saturday Night Live. I don't know how important he is or how popular or how creativity that is. I have nothing. Don't know any of that.
Probably a good thing.
And, well, man, you know, that guy was badass.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And, but I had, probably a good thing. I see what you're saying, but just like, I didn't know who he was. I didn't care, except that he is interested in this music.
Sure.
And that's how we got together. Right. He wants to learn. I want to teach.
Sure.
I want to tell everybody who these people are.
I
want everybody to have credit where credit is due. It's just part of my nature. And I'm not trying to be cool. It is part of my nature.
Yeah.
Like, that isn't... Led Zeppelin didn't do that song.
Well, yeah, I think
Sonny Boy Williamson did.
I think all of us have that in us.
Yeah.
You know,
it's true.
We're really into it.
I'm very into it. So get this. So I got a big validation when in the 1990s at the Chicago Blues Fest, this girl comes over and goes, Floyd Dixon wants to see you.
Wow.
Floyd is here. And I was playing with you.
Oh, right. That's right. With me and Clark.
That's right. And I go, really? And he goes, yeah, he's over at the main stage. I went over to the main stage. And Floyd Dixon, we hug and stuff. How are you doing and stuff? Curtis, he says, I gotta want to tell you this. If it wasn't for you, I made the biggest royalty check I had ever received in my career. And to me, all of these thoughts are coming together in a nanosecond. As one is his careers, we're talking 1940s,
yeah,
after the war.
Oh, yeah.
He's making 78s.
Right, right.
And this is the biggest royalty check. And here he is telling me, and he gave me credit. I got choked up. And I go, that's so nice of you.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah. I go, well, if you don't mind me asking, how much was the check? I mean, what was your royalty check? He goes, my first royalty check was for $78,000.
Wow.
So I want to be always accurate. So 78. He said over $70,000. So I hear 78 in my head. So $78,000. And I thought, wow, that's it. And again, I'm thinking, what's, you know, so he must have bought it because do you remember he used to have an office in San Francisco? And what it was basically a... It was basically a wall phone at the end of a bar.
Wow.
And that was it.
See,
that was his office.
I didn't know
and
that.
And you'd go to his office, which was, you know, there off of Grant Street or something. And it was a pay phone at the end of the bar. There was a box of records.
What a trip.
And you know what I bought? Freight Twist.
Oh, yeah.
Late Freight Twist.
By Johnny Guitar Watson.
Johnny Guitar Watson.
And that's him on that.
That's him on that,
right?
Doing that,
right,
you know. It sold as a Floyd Dixon tune.
Wow.
And when I got home and played it, it was like, holy Christ, this is Johnny Guitar Watson, you know.
Yeah,
so
that's heavy duty, man.
So anyhow, you know, so here he is. I'm thinking, $78,000, what's this guy going to do? And this is the truth. So he goes, oh, man. He looked off like this and took his glasses. He had shades on. He looked off in the distance. He goes, I spent it all on the horses. Oh, I had a wonderful time. I tell that story because when people want to know about the blues.
Yeah, that's the blues.
That's the blues. I had a great time. I spent it all on the horses.
One of my favorites one time Charles Brown goes, he goes, well, you know, back when I was really playing the ponies, I was a millionaire about three times.
Okay, let's talk of that. So I will end up going, now we're all over the map. I come, make friends with you. You and I are playing with Johnny Rogers and Sonny Lane.
Johnny Waters and Sonny Lane. Right.
And I have a story to tell where I take my girlfriend, the girl I lost my virginity with, named Penny Perrin. And Penny and I flew to stay with Sonny Rhodes.
Right.
In the hood.
Right.
In Oakland.
Right.
And we were probably the only... You know, young something, white kids for miles around.
Yeah.
And that was one of the best experiences, you know. I mean, it was like, okay, boom, here it is.
Yeah.
And it's a nice neighborhood.
Yeah.
Nice people, nice neighborhood stuff. And Sonny Rhodes' part was like, Curtis, like, what are we going to do today? And Sonny's like, well, we're going to go take my TV and go to the pawn shop. And so we go to the pawn shop, and I'm bopping along. Oh, boy, you know, let's go to the pawn shop. And he hands in his TV, and he goes, that's my guitar up there. And so he take his guitar, and we go and do a gig.
Wow.
And then the next day.
He'd take it back and get his TV back.
Get his TV back. Oh, and then he had his son, Calvin.
Right.
Calvin was really nice, very, very streetwise, of course. And Calvin would roll up, we'd buy a big bag of weed. I got another one for you. This experience is like, you know, Penny and I are on Mars.
Alternate universe.
And like one morning we woke up, one morning, it was about 7 o'clock. We spent like a week with Sonny in the hood. And it was great. Except you could just see you know, big differences.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking poverty and this and that. It was just how it was
culturally.
Ran. Culturally, yeah. Thank you. And so we wake up one morning and he had a daughter named Renee and a son named Calvin, and they're arguing. They're arguing with a group of kids, and I open up the window and look out, and there they are throwing dice.
Wow.
And they're arguing over money. Motherfucker.
Wow.
She's like, you kids shut up out there. You know, I can't remember his first wife's name.
Betty.
Betty, really yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
And she was like, you know, kids quiet down out there, that kind of stuff. And they're arguing over it. And I'm watching them roll dice against the curb, throw their quarters and their dollar bills and right. Their stuff. You know, that ain't happening.
No, when that I ain't happening up. In Eugene.
That ain't happening in Eugene. That isn't happening in my household.
No.
You know, no. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, my father was a baker and stuff, and where we were from, my father baked, worked for the William Bakery, but we weren't middle class, but you can't tell, you know.
Right.
You know, the folks is, but this is totally different. This is a whole other culture.
It's an education.
It's an education.
Yeah,
this is
for sure
far more mature and far yeah. More streetwise than where I'm coming up.
Well,
was I in fights as a little kid? Yeah. Did I do all this? Yes, yes. But this is just a whole different thing.
Right? Different ball game.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, they're gambling.
But you know? But I mean, there's a lot to be said to be a part of something like that, even if it's just for a minute, to kind of get some kind of feel for what African American life is like outside of what most white people don't even bother to get to know.
True.
Yep. You know?
That's far better than I could have put it. That's what yeah. I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And so here's another one. So and we'd sit and smoke weed, watch television. Calvin would roll it all up and put all of it in a bowl. And, you know, Betty make everybody. It was very, very, it was fun.
Yeah.
And Sonny was a great host.
Yeah.
And this is what would happen. So he goes, let's go. So we ran out of weed at some point, and we were there for a few days, you know. And it's like a 2-week vacation.
Right.
And Sonny and I walked down the street. And this guy goes, hey, man, want some clum? Want some Colombian? You know, want some clum? I'm going, what's his? He wants, you know. Yeah, you know, Sonny Rose voice. Yeah. What do you have? What do you have in your stuff? And this guy reaches in and he pulls out these joints that are toothpick thin. It's just like, and I'm thinking to myself, I smoke weed at this time, you know, a lot of it. And I'm looking at, Jesus, that is the sorriest looking joint I've ever seen. But Sonny sees the same thing and he goes, man, what are you doing? What do you think I am? Do you know who I am? I'm Sonny Rhodes.
I'm Sonny Rhodes, the disciple of the blues, the sheik of West Oakland.
That's it. That's exact. He goes, I'm yeah. Sonny Rhodes, and we're like this. And the guy goes, oh, and opens up another side of his coat. On this side, he's got all this in the grocery store. I've never seen
he's
that.
He's like a before. Walking drug
he's
store.
He's a walking drug store with one on this that's side and one on that. I just thought, wow, man. You know, this isn't just out of the movies. This is right down the street right. In California.
This he goes is how like it this. Works.
And then he pulls out a great big fat bomber.
Right.
Goes
right.
Here, you know.
And did he give it to him?
Yeah, he gave it to great. Him and yeah. Then sold a few more and we went back to the house and
Sonny was an important
bomb.
Man.
He was. And oh man, just he was hilarious. Well, so he introduced me to you. Gary introduced me. That's how.
Yeah.
I've kind of lost my direction here, but.
Now, did
you know,
did,
man,
did Craig
think
did
of
Craig
all the people down there? Sonny Rhodes?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he met him and talked to him. I don't remember.
I mean, he definitely knew Frankie Lee, as I recall.
Oh, yeah. So here you want the Frankie yeah. Lee thing?
Yeah.
So Robert Cray and Richard Cousins and myself are hanging out together in Eugene, and Robert and Richard keep talking about Bobby Murray. And Bobby Murray, it's like, I'd only met him a fun time. He was a Japanese American, and he is hilarious. And he is he has just absorbed the black culture, right? And he will. And he hasn't moved yet, but he will move down to Oakland.
Yep.
And he scored a gig with little Frankie Lee, who's the cousin of my hero, Johnny Guitar Watson.
Right.
And he brought back this record. And we just thought, Bobby Murray, and Bobby Murray was like, and Robert, we all felt this way. It was just like, Bobby Murray is a bad mosquito. And I don't know, he's something else. That guy is something else. Like, he could be a stand-up comedian, he could be whatever. He's a killer guitar player, and just his whole... just his whole demeanor is hip. And so we were like this.
I got some good stories.
Yeah, right. I know.
Bobby, we won't tell him right here, though.
Right, right. Bobby could drink.
Yes, he could.
Right.
But he could get in fights.
Yes.
With guys about 10 times his size.
But that's all you have to say
right
there.
That's right.
But man, as a person and stuff, he's a beautiful person.
No, he is a beautiful guy.
I mean, you know, I don't know if the folks out there, we're both clean and sober, and I'm really glad that we are, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure Bobby is too.
Shit, yeah.
Otherwise, he wouldn't be alive.
No, neither would we. But Bobby Murray is, we're like this. He has moved to Oakland, and he's playing with little Frankie Lee. And I hear this record, and he does Strung Out. And I can't remember what the other side is.
Which you put in your repertoire.
I did put that in my...
And that's the one with Johnny Guitar Watson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Johnny's producing it.
Right.
And little Frankie Lee is singing it.
Right.
So me and a friend of mine, who I was teaching harmonica to back in high school, I hipped him to the blues, like you get hip, you know. So Michael Muthart. Michael and I have known each other a long time. And he's like, what are you doing? What is this stuff? You know, whatever. And he got interested. And he started buying the record. And then, of course, Bill Rhodes helped with that too and stuff.
Right.
And Muthart's a natural, you know. So anyhow, him and I drive to the My Club.
I might have met Mike Muthart on that trip.
I think so.
I go way back with him, back to when we first met. Yeah.
We went to the My Club, drove around to find it, and we were the only two Caucasians in an all-black club.
Yeah.
And it was, I've got some stories of that. And there is the Japanese American.
Right.
That's our kind of our ticket in. And I saw Frankie Lee sing the shit out of it. I mean, just, he was so, it was like, this was, to me, this was a solid, beautiful black experience.
Yeah.
And it was a killer band. And Frankie Lee is doing Johnny Taylor, ZZ Hill, his own stuff, you know, all this stuff. And then...
and that guy put he put out no matter what.
Oh,
I saw that guy put out in front of like five people one night.
Oh, yeah.
And it was
he's in the zone.
It was like, Jesus, man, if this guy can do this, this is like saying something about commitment.
Right, right.
You know?
You learn from that.
Yeah, you do.
Same thing from, that's showbiz. That's what it should be like.
Exactly.
He put the mic down on the floor and walked away. I'd never seen that trick. I know he didn't invent it, but he could put the mic down and sing. The band would come down.
And he'd sing all around the
house. All around the house. Right. Another time that I went to the My Club.
I saw Roy Brown do that one time, too.
I went to the My Club. At another time, this first time with Michael was full, the second time wasn't, so I've only been there twice. But the second time, some woman was asleep on the bar. He woke her up. Hey, watch the show. I'm performing here. I love it. I mean, talk about a hard crowd.
Yeah.
You know what
I mean?
That's
a hard crowd when they're sleeping.
And he was, so that's who, with being next to Robert, and Robert just singing, so dead on the street, he never missed. Whatever, but this is like with all sorts of shading and and the a true gospel singer.
Yeah.
And he would sing and stuff. And he told me once, he goes, you remind me of Etta James. Your voice, your timbre, your sound. Because I had a higher voice then and stuff. But I didn't take it as a
compliment.
I did. I took it as a compliment.
Yeah, you should.
I did not.
You didn't back then.
When I was saying, what I'm saying is I wasn't going to say I didn't take it as a compliment.
Right, right.
I didn't get bothered by that.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, wow, yeah. And Buddy Ace is the other one. Now we're talking about me and who taught me, but it was little Frankie Lee. And I had a cassette tape of that show.
Well, you know what's interesting is...
I practiced it over and over.
I was going to say, Frankie and Sonny became really thick.
Right.
Those guys became like best friends.
Sonny Lane?
No, I'm talking about Sonny Rhodes.
Oh, Sonny Rhodes, yes.
And Frankie became really, they were like, you know, they, unfortunately, they were both in their addictions at the same time.
Right.
But no, they were, they ended up moving to the East Coast at the same time together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I didn't, by this point, I'm out of their scope.
Right.
I would see Sonny, but that's years later.
Right. I used to run into Sonny everywhere.
Really?
All over the continent.
I believe it.
I mean, literally, I would run into him and I'd go into like the Cecil Hotel in Vancouver and there'd be Sonny getting a Coke out of the machine.
Yeah.
And go, what the hell are you doing here? Well, same thing you're doing here. You know? And then, you know, and then we'd be playing some gig in like, what's the town in South Dakota? Deadwood, South Dakota or something, you know? And there's Sonny pulling up in his van with like a little minivan with like six guys jumping out.
Right, right.
And they drove all the way from like, you know, D.C. or something.
Right.
Yeah.
God.
But, yeah.
Yeah, after I got more, you know, onto my life and stuff, I rarely saw Sonny, but I did see him. And you know, that guy, Dwayne, brought him in recently before.
Yeah.
So I started seeing Sonny again in the last few years.
Right.
Not a lot.
He came
in Oregon,
by one of the gigs we did, I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let me say, Sonny Rhodes, the guy was a singing fool. So Sonny Rhodes, little Frankie Lee, and Buddy Ace were the guys that I had hands-on.
Right. Experience.
And Buddy Ace is literally someone who sat down with me, and he was in Hawaii, and we were both in Hawaii together, which is a long story. But he sat down there, and we spent a couple of days. We were at the same resort, and I'd hang out with him. And he goes, you got to learn how to worry a note.
Wow.
That's what he called. What do you mean worry? Well, he goes, you know, a lot of people, they sing the blues too quick. You got to milk the word.
Yeah,
you gotta
that's
worry.
Interesting. Wow.
So somebody you listen to, Mike Bloomfield, go, when I met you, baby, you were just sweet 16.
Instead of taking the time.
Met you, baby.
Right.
Baby, you were just sweet 16.
Yeah.
You know.
And so
and
much
like,
of that.
Oh,
and
so each much, word. Each
so
thing,
much
yeah.
of that comes from the thing of being able to work within the melody.
Right.
Because that's how come Bloomfield would sing it so fast.
Right.
He didn't know
they're
how to
not,
work within
they're
the
thinking
melody.
About playing
they're thinking about the guitar.
They're playing the guitar and I want to get my riffs in.
Right.
They're not thinking about singing.
Yeah.
And really, the blues and stuff, whatever, you know, harmonica, violin, guitar, piano, this and that. But it's about singing.
It sure is.
And that's
the vocal
that's
music first.
Yes. That's
absolutely.
Right. Which a lot of people have missed.
Yeah.
Especially the newcomers.
Well, and I think so much of that comes from the fact that instruments are such a major part of it now.
Right.
Compared to back in the day.
Right.
You know.
And check this out. So B.B. King doesn't sound like Freddie King, who doesn't sound like Albert King, who doesn't sound like Big Ivory Joe Hunter, who doesn't sound like Donnie Washington, who doesn't sound like Big Mama Thornton, who doesn't sound like on it. None of those people.
Yeah.
Sam Cooke doesn't sound like so-and-so, doesn't sound like so-and-so.
Yeah.
Wilson Pickett doesn't sound like Sam Cooke, who doesn't sound... All of those people, all of the great hits, you know. Well, let's get a little off track a little. Willie Maben doesn't sound like Eddie Boyd, who doesn't sound like... They all have distinct voices, even the big hit ones.
Yep.
You know, Brooke Benton doesn't sound like,
It's funny how
Stevie Wonder, who doesn't sound like Marvin Gaye, who doesn't sound like.
It's interesting how the older you get, the more you want your own style too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You better.
When
find
you're
it.
Young, you might go, "Well, I want to sound just like so and so," but as you get older, you go, "I want my own style." I want something that people hear me and go, that's so-and-so.
I don't know if it's getting older, just think if you want to mature, because a record company is going to go, we already have a Stevie Wonder.
Right, right.
Exactly. We already have it.
Yeah,
remember that one guy was really cool that we'd see at the San Francisco Blues Festival who sang just like something blue.
What, oh, Little Joe Blue.
Little Joe Blue.
Yes, man, just like B.B. King.
Nailed B.B. King.
Yeah, he could nail B.B.
But there's already a B.B. King.
Right, that's right. Know? Yeah.
King, you got to find your own thing.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
That's what I'm not hearing in modern contemporary pop music.
Yeah.
And a lot in blues. There's some cats coming out there that, you know, has got their own thing. But you got to find your own voice. You got to be influenced, but then you got to find it. And then it's hard. That's hard to define. Well, what's my own style? If I'm taking all of these, you know, just the way
hopefully
it is.
Hopefully it's like, a mix of everything.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully it is that mix of all these different people and that somehow out of that you do get your own thing.
Yeah.
You know?
I like to talk about singing with Rick Estrin a lot. He's a...
Yeah.
He's an influence on me.
Big fan of all those.
Yeah, but he puts things into a perspective.
Right. We better run. We got to do the sound check here in a minute. But Curtis, thank you so much, sir.
I can't believe we're sitting here.
Yes.
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
Hi, I'm Mark Hummel. I hope you're enjoying the Harmonica Party and the other content that we post on our channel. Now you can become part of the show for the price of a cheap cup of coffee. For $3 a month, you can help bring the blues and the stories to you.